Good morning. You're listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Welcome to Husky Nation News. Listen in every Friday to hear all the news you need to know about the University of Connecticut, courtesy of the WHUS News Department and UConn newspaper, The Daily Campus. I'm your host, Sarah Larshani, and let's get started. In an effort to address climate change, the University of Connecticut has joined 17 other universities across North America to form the University Climate Change Coalition, or UC3. The story was reported by Gabriela De Benedictis, a staff writer for The Daily Campus. De Benedictis reports that the universities involved have committed to utilizing their resources and expertise to accelerate local and regional climate change action in partnership with businesses, cities, and states. Director of UConn's Office of Environmental Policy, Rich Miller, tells The Daily Campus that the university's main commitment is to host forums to see how UConn's research can create solutions to climate change in 2019. Miller says the purpose of the UC3 coalition is to accelerate the transfer of new knowledge among academics, government, businesses, and communities. In this way, we can create a demand-driven climate research agenda that meets the needs of our region so that we can scale up to meet the global goals set in Paris in 2015. Miller also says universities can be a part of the solution to get the country to a net zero carbon emission by 2050. The Health and Wellness Center began its three-part meditation series earlier this week, writes Daily Campus staff writer Rebecca Marr. The meditation and mindfulness class is taught by Nishki Ahmed from the center, who shared the importance and benefits of meditation, which includes stress management and better focus. The class consisted of different meditations aimed at addressing different stressors a participant may have. Ahmed began the event by first sharing the purpose of meditation and mindfulness. Psychology major and junior Troy Serwinski says, "I was actually not going to come, but I wanted to know what this whole thing was about, and I also wanted to take part in the whole health and wellness." Marr writes that the exercise was very calming and that the instructor spoke very quietly and was attentive to the needs of individual participants. Marr says, "When we opened our eyes, it was like waking up after refreshing sleep, our minds clear of everything that had troubled us before coming in." The next session will be held this Tuesday, September 26th at 6 p.m. The University of Connecticut Undergraduate Student Government will be working with Mental Health Connecticut for a mental health first aid class, which will be held tomorrow, Saturday the 22nd. The story was reported by Taylor Harton, a campus correspondent for The Daily Campus. The class will focus on teaching students the signs of mental health struggles and ways to reach out to struggling peers and also help them access professional help. Derek Pan, the USG Student Services Committee Chair, tells Harton that the class was full to capacity. "I've had overwhelming responses of people who are interested. I'm hoping to add one more class at least this semester. Next week is UConn Suicide Prevention Week." In other news, the effects of Hurricane Florence, which flooded the Carolinas this week, have reached Connecticut. Campus correspondent Natalie Ballacher covered this for the Daily Campus. The main concern is a worry that the Northeast could expect more hurricanes this season. A natural resources and the environment professor and the director of the Connecticut State Climate Center, Zhuxiang Yang, tells the Daily Campus that it's hard to predict if a storm will hit Connecticut since hurricane prediction is not state-specific. Yang says there's a low chance that a hurricane will actually hit the state, but landfall is definitely possible. Yang says, "Because Connecticut is blocking its way, so landfall could be in Connecticut and New England, but that's very rare, and we only get a storm like that every 20, 30 years." New Haven's Director of Emergency Operations, Rick Fontana, is still recommending that residents be prepared for future storms in the wake of Hurricane Florence. He suggests utilizing the Connecticut Emergency Preparedness Mobile Application, or CT Preps app, to get helpful resources in case of a weather emergency. On a less serious note, our very own news correspondent Kara Murray covered actress of popular comedy show The Office, Angela Kinsey, and her visit to UConn. Take a listen.
Angela Kinsey, the actress best known for her role as Angela Martin on the NBC television series The Office, shared behind-the-scenes stories and more with a laughing audience when she visited the University of Connecticut last Thursday. Subog Comedy Chair Colton Kopchick served as the moderator for the event, which was held in the Jorgensen Center for the Performing Arts. Approximately 1,000 people attended the talk, which was free for all UConn undergraduate students. The first half of the lecture was a Q&A between Kopchick and Kinsey, while the second was devoted to answering fan questions. UConn students submitted their questions to the Subog Twitter account a few days prior, and those that were selected were shown on screen. Each time, Kinsey stood up and asked the person whose question was chosen to stand up if they were in the audience. Kinsey discussed her life growing up in Jakarta, Indonesia, and later Texas. She graduated from Baylor University in 1993 and moved to Los Angeles to pursue acting. For several years, she starred in various commercials before auditioning for the role of receptionist Pam Beasley on a new NBC show, The Office.
I didn't get the part that they thought I was a little too feisty. And then 2 months later, I got a phone call and they were like, hey, so they're now filling out the world of the show and they really think that you'd be great. They want you to come in for this role of this woman in accounting who's kind of judgy and a little bit of a
Kinsey also told many funny stories from her time on The Office, which ran from 2005 to 2013, such as certain props she took home from the set and being close with former castmates Jenna Fischer and Rainn Wilson.
It just clicked, like everything was just there.
Melissa Bergio, who was a member of Subog Comedy, was impressed with the event.
I think it was a great lecture. I think everybody really enjoyed having her here, and she put on a great show.
For WHUS News, I'm Kara Murray.
That's all the news we have for you this morning. We're going to take a short break before we welcome our guest, Anna Zara Aldridge, the Associate News Editor of the Daily Campus.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Last summer, residents in West Woodlawn, a primarily African-American community in Chicago, helped identify and map all their neighborhood trees. The project laid the groundwork for this fall's tree planting campaign.
We'll get the neighbors together and we'll present the data. We'll show them the recommended species options. We want to consider how it flowers in the spring, how it goes to leaf in the summer, the colors it turns in the fall, and how it looks naked in the winter.
That's Naomi Davis, founder of the nonprofit Blacks in Green. She says beauty is not the only goal. Trees can increase property values and provide shade that helps residents stay cool and save energy. They divert stormwater, help purify the air, and absorb carbon pollution.
It is the environment and the economy. It is about health and wealth. We can work together as neighbors from the ground up, organize ourselves, train ourselves, and fund ourselves to live in beautiful, healthy places.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
We are back from that short break. We'll now be moving into the discussion portion of our new show. Please note, from this point forward, the views and opinions expressed on this WHUS News Department show are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or license of WHUS Radio or the University of Connecticut. I'm in the studio with Anna Zara Aldridge, the Associate News Editor of the Daily Campus. And Anna, hi, how's it going?
Hi, it's going well. Thank you for having me.
Can you just start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm a junior this year at UConn, and I'm triple majoring in journalism, political science, and English. So I have a lot going on.
Oh my goodness. And three majors?
Yep.
How are you managing all that?
I'm very good at time management. I've structured my schedule in a way where I have nice, well-placed breaks where I can do my homework. It works out, even though I'm also working a second job in the Office of the Vice President for Research in their comm department. So,
tell me a little bit of why you chose, you know, journalism, English, and political science as your triple major. What got you interested into those three topics?
Yeah, sure. So I actually came in my freshman year totally undecided. I was considering like five or six different majors at the time. And then I joined the Daily Campus. That was one of the first things I did once I got here. And I just immediately fell in love with journalism and writing and being a reporter. And I thought, wow, I could really do this. But at the same time, I thought, I'm still really interested in English. I just always loved the field of English, reading, writing those essays. And I thought, I'm at college. When else am I going to be able to get credit for just reading and writing all day? And then political science, because I do want to go into political-focused journalism, I thought that was a really good specialization to have on my resume.
And obviously, as I mentioned, you're the associate news editor for the Daily Campus, so you've been involved with the Daily Campus for all 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually really important because our conversation today is going to be about sort of, I don't want to say the recent, but I think the amped up attack on journalists and this whole idea of fake news or the fact that journalists are the enemy of the people. And so just to start off, I want to get your take, I should say, on, you know, that current climate for journalists and journalism as a field.
Yeah, I think it definitely is something that is felt even down at the university student level, because people are constantly attacking journalists. And I think because we are such a social media heavy culture, people can now go on Twitter. And I've actually had people come on my Twitter about articles I've written. So I think it is a very hostile climate, but I think journalists at the same time are very resilient to it, and they are willing to stand up for their work, for their industry.
And obviously you've been involved with the Daily Campus for 3 years. Can you maybe give us some examples about of when this idea of fake news or this idea of journalists being the enemy of the people has sort of been real, or you've experienced those effects within your organization?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of different situations where people are threatening to sue us, even though we have every legal right to publish the information we're publishing, or people just attacking us for different viewpoints that we include. Like one article I did in 2016, right after the election, it was an article talking to Republicans, Trump supporters, and non-Trump supporters about how they felt about the climate on campus after the election. And people really disliked that article, saying, oh, you shouldn't be giving a voice to these people. They're just complaining and playing the victim. So I think people do really attack journalists sometimes when they see something they don't like or they don't agree with that should have been written or how it was written. And I feel like you see that with controversies with, like, the New York Times when they did that story about hate next door. But I think it trickles all the way down to the university level. But journalists have been very good at standing up for their work and explaining, this is why I wrote the article. This is the considerations that we put into it. We don't just write things because we feel like it thoughtlessly. There are actual ethical industry standard considerations.
I like that you mentioned that because this is obviously, I'm also a journalism student. And so obviously that's been something that's been on my mind. And I found myself in a position where I almost have to be a PR person for our industry or for what I do. Have you found yourself in that same position or a similar position maybe?
Oh, absolutely. I think when I tell people I want to go into journalism, I want to be a reporter, they say, why do you want to do that? It's just not a great field to be in. People are reporting so much fake news. But I stand up for and say, maybe some journalists are like that. Maybe some outlets are much less reliable than others. But I personally hold myself to high standards. And those are the standards I bring to my work as a student reporter and will bring into the field as a professional. And I point out other instances of journalism where other journalists in the field right now have done incredible things, bringing light to things that really need to be exposed. And that's what journalism is about. And I stand behind my profession, or the profession I aspire to have, I stand behind and say we serve an important role. We bring information to people that they don't have the ability to go and dig up themselves, that they need to be informed of.
And I just think that's super interesting because I think I'll give you sort of an example of cases where I feel like people don't always understand what journalism is or what journalists are. And so I was talking to you earlier and we were talking about how some people, I'll always log into my Facebook page and there's always someone who will have either a clip from The Daily Show or any other late night show, and they'll go on this long rant about how this is biased, this isn't fair journalism, and I'd have to comment and say, well, this isn't journalism. And so what do you think our job as journalists in identifying media literacy or explaining what our profession is compared to other people who exist on the same spheres who are maybe practicing satire or political commentary? How do we differentiate ourselves? Or is it our job to even do that?
I think it is important to distinguish ourselves from commentators and satirists and comedians, because they're there to say whatever they want. They don't have to hold themselves to standards of fairness and factuality. But journalists, I feel like, are the people that go out and they gather news. They bring sources together and they represent things fairly and factually based on the information that they themselves are able to receive firsthand. And I think that that firsthand element of what is what marks a journalist from a commentator. Because a commentator just takes news that they get from a bunch of different sources and gives their opinion and makes jokes about it, whereas journalists are the ones going out and assembling the news.
So I have a question for you when it comes to that. In your experience, what's the process of gathering a news story or a controversial news story, and how do you sort of make sure that it's factual or it's ethical? What does that look like?
Yeah, so what I do is when I have a story that might be on shaky ground where I think there might be a story here or people have been saying that this is going on, I start with what is 100% known and who can I talk about what is known. And so from there, I ask them about the controversial aspects and say, people have been saying such and such about this. Do you have a reaction to it? And then that's part of the story, the reaction to the allegations. And then I start reaching out to the people who are representing the other side of the story and see what they have to say. And I always make sure that I'm confirming everything along the way. And so I always make sure when there's something that's on shaky ground that I get both sides and I research them thoroughly. And if there is anything that I was not able to ascertain 100%, I still might include the other perspective, but make it very clear that this document that they say it exists was not available, or this person is just saying this, and frame it more as their opinion versus the newspaper's statement of fact.
So do you think within this climate, do we have to do a better job at our jobs? Or are we just continually being vigorous in everything that we do? How has that shaped the way that we go about reporting the news?
I think we absolutely have to become more vigilant, because one of the easiest ways for someone to say, oh, that's fake news, even though this isn't usually how they're actually using it, is if there's an error. And as soon as a paper or any other kind of news source makes an error, that's pointed out by people from the opposing side of the aisle saying, look at them, they're fake news, they're not careful, they're not reporting the truth, they're not doing their job to serve the constituency of the people. So I think if you are very careful about what you're reporting, you double check everything, and you can stand behind and say, this report is accurate unless for some reason we were lied to, but they had no reason to believe that they were. I feel like it's very important, because if you can show that you did your job, you checked the facts yourself and were very careful, then it's a lot harder for people to attack you for not being good at your job.
I think it's an important point to make right now to try to understand how the term fake news has been applied. And so when I look at it, a lot of the times I see it as a phrase that's used to shut down news that may very well be true that people just don't agree with or people don't like. And how do you combat that? Or have you ran into this experience where things that may be factual have been called fake because there's a constituency or there's a group of people that just don't like it or don't want to accept it? Has that happened, and how do you deal with it if it has?
Yeah, I see that all the time, whether it's on social media or people just talking to me about things. And I think what's important to address when people are saying things are fake news when they're not actually inaccurate is to realize that they're probably saying only one side of an argument is being represented, or maybe just the way that the facts are being portrayed or the light and how the story is constructed, like what's in the lead, what's at the top of the story versus what's mentioned at the very end, almost trying to bury it. And so I think if people start to realize that not everything they're calling is fake is actually untruthful, but they just have a problem with how it's being reported, that could be a valid criticism. But if they just have a problem with what is being reported, then they just don't like the news, and that's not really the journalist's problem. But if it is a problem with how slight ways that biases are seeping into our news coverage, I think that is something that we can address and that we as journalists can do better to make sure we're representing things fairly.
Now, you mentioned something that I think is interesting, and it's the fact that sometimes people don't listen to news that they don't like. And so I see this happening, and I guess it's my personal opinion. I think people are sort of seeping into echo chambers. it's not just left or right, it's various echo chambers where they're only getting their news from specific sources or they're only hearing perspectives that they agree with. And I think one of our goals as journalists is to expose people to all sorts of opinions. How do we do that?
I think one way is to be aware of who your typical audience is. Maybe your audience is very right-leaning or very left-leaning typically. And so if you go and seek out stories that would normally appeal to someone else or maybe from a voice that hasn't been heard at all from either side, I feel like that's part of the job of the journalist is to give voice to the voiceless. And also to if you're doing one piece that has that's a very complex issue that has a lot of opinions to it, is to bring those together into a synthesized article so that whoever your readership is, they're getting viewpoints from both sides.
Now, I'm kind of going to shift this conversation a little bit. I know personally that you aren't just, obviously you're not just a journalism student. I know that you do poetry and you do other sorts of creative writing. So is journalism something that you want to do post-grad?
Yes, absolutely.
And do you think the current, have you paid a lot of attention to the current state of the media and of journalism? And has that factored into maybe what you want to do postgraduate?
Yeah, I was actually asked recently if the current of this anti-media enemy of the people sentiment has made me any less willing to be a journalist. But in its way, it has made me want to be a journalist even more. Because I want to stand up for this profession because I believe in what it does and what I can do in it by holding myself to these own standards. And I feel like people will come to appreciate the role of journalists if they are combating this negative stigma in the right way by holding themselves to higher standards and producing stories that are important and aren't deemed fake news.
So to me, it sounds like you actually turned this into a positive where you're trying to hold yourself to a higher standard in a way to combat that sort of negative conversation that's happening around this profession.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I feel like that's a lot more productive and a lot more helpful than just arguing back at people saying you're fake news with no, we're not. It's to show we're not. And this is the kind of work we're doing that we can show you to prove that we're not, that we're doing our job.
Do you think, I know there's a bit of a difference between local news and national news when it comes to this conversation. Do you think there's a distinction there when it comes to student media? Like another layer of the conversation where you're sort of on campus, you're writing stories about students for students. Does that factor into if people call you fake news or the enemy of the people or how that sort of conversation or that environment exists?
Yeah, it's interesting because we are a tier three organization funded by student fees, so we really are designed to represent the students. And so a lot of times students will come to us and say, we want you to do a story in this because it's important to me. And so sometimes we have to balance that because sometimes we get requests for stories that we're like, this isn't really much of a story, or we can't prove anything you're telling us. And so that's when it gets a little hostile. It's like you're still reporting it because I feel like a lot of times people don't understand that journalists can't just go out and publish whatever someone tells them. There is a process. We need to gather facts. We need to be able to certify everything. And I think that's where some of the animosity comes from and saying, why aren't you covering this? Well, chances are there's a reason that we haven't been covering this.
So when situations like that come up, how do you, as an organization or as an associate news editor, how do you tackle them? How do you sort of explain to people what it is that you do in the process of, you know, bringing a new story to print or to digital?
Yeah, I think that we, and myself included in that, try to explain our process as clearly as possible. We'll say, thank you for telling us about this, but here are some of the steps that we're going to need to go through before we can publish a story. So maybe we start by saying, okay, tell us everything about your side. Who are some other people we can talk to? Do you have any documentation of this? And so if none of that comes to fruition, then we'll explain, we can't publish it because we couldn't verify this, or we couldn't talk to this person to find out if what you're saying is accurate. And we can't be putting our own reputation as the student's news source to represent them accurately and fairly online by printing something that can't be proven and very well may be false.
Now, you were telling me earlier about an award that the Daily Campus gives
yes.
out for basically investigative pieces or stories that may have some some, you know, pushback. Tell me a little more about that. I just thought it was interesting.
Yes, so we have the Filthy Journalist Award that we just introduced starting this semester. And we give it to reporters who go sort of above and beyond, like, daily basic coverage or just going to an event, talking to some students, reporting it. It's when they find something that's slightly controversial, that might get under the skin of administrators, that we get some pushback from. But it's when we get the pushback because it was honest and it made someone in power mad. For example, we had one where there was an E.O. Smith High School student who got caught attempting to have inappropriate relations with a girl. And one of our reporters dug into that story and he got some great commentary and found out that he was actually a NEAG alum. So he got our Filthy Journalist Award for doing a really great dig into that story that wasn't a super easy story. It definitely wasn't a puff piece type of story, but that's what journalism is. It's really digging into stuff that matters, that your everyday person wouldn't be able to or wouldn't think to go out and find for themselves, and bringing things to light.
And what's the importance, or why do we go after, or why do you go after stories like that?
I think it's important because people who are in more powerful positions, and really anyone who's just doing something that's wrong, deserves to be exposed. And obviously, fairly, you're not just going to throw someone under the bus because you don't like them or think that they're too powerful, but because you need to expose those people. And I feel like journalists are uniquely situated to do that because we have the skills and we have the inclination to go out and hunt, to search, to be that filthy journalist, to find something that we think the public deserves to know about, and we present everything factually and fairly and let them draw their own conclusions, but at least the information is now out there, and whatever consequences follow will follow.
All right, is there anything else you feel I should know about fake news or about how student journalists are handling it or tackling it or just your own experience with it?
I think after this conversation, I would like people to come away with a better appreciation of the fact that there are considerations that go into writing a story. There are a lot of things we think about. There's a long process to verify information. And I feel like a lot of people think that news kind of just shows up and happens, but it's a very long process, and a lot of times things don't get published because we can't, and that's when we're really taking our responsibilities seriously, and to just know that journalists really do care about what we're doing, and to do the best job that we possibly can.
I have one last question. And I know the Daily Campus is technically print, but you guys obviously exist online, so does almost every organization. Do you see, what's the relationship between readers and, you know, editors or reporters online? Is that another place where, you know, you can get feedback or you can get conversations started about the stories that you're doing?
Yeah, we get feedback from a lot of different places, from comments, from Twitter, from emails, people writing in to our op-ed department. So I feel like because it is digital, people can instantly retweet a story with their commentary, and then it can really just blow up instantly. And maybe back in the days of print, that would have been a much slower process, and maybe wouldn't have happened at all. It would have just been some people talking to each other and maybe feeling a certain way about something. But because it is social media, we can get that feedback immediately, and something can really blow up in a positive or negative light, and that's something that we need to be able to combat in real time.
So how have you used the feedback that you've received, whether it's good or bad, to sort of impact or influence your reporting, or has it even?
I think it definitely does impact, because if you see people are saying, we didn't like what you did here because X, Y, and Z, then we really analyze that and say, okay, is this something that we can change? Is this criticism really based in something, a relevant concern that we can address, or is it just somebody blowing off hot air because they didn't like the story? And if it's something positive, people say, you did a really great job with this, then we say, awesome, let's do more of that. Let's cover this issue more in depth. Let's find more stories like this. So both kinds of positive and negative criticism are really valuable for us in shaping this paper to make sure it reflects the students and what they want as best they can.
All right, well, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. It was great chatting with you. Well, this is the end of our show. This has been highly informational. Thank you to all of you for listening. Thank you to the Daily Campus for collaborating with us. And thank you to Ethan Smith, the creator of intro music. I've been your host, Sarah Larshani, and you are listening to WHUS Stores 91.7 FM. Enjoy the rest of your day.